Hey, it's Coach Kate here, registered dietitian and owner of RD Kate Sports Nutrition. As a member of the LCC Stars Athletic Department, I teach our athletes what to eat and when to eat it on training days, competition days, and throughout the year. For over a decade, I've been helping athletes of all sports and levels meet their goals. RD Kate Sports Nutrition offers individual consulting, team services, on-demand courses, and downloadable handouts. For more information, visit rdkate.com.
Hello, friends, and welcome to Coach Cut's Corner. Streaming bright from Michigan's capital city, this podcast is dedicated to helping you better understand the who, the what, and the why of mental performance, personal growth, and Lansing Stars baseball. Coach Cut's Corner, brought to you by Eyewash.
In collaboration with Lansing Community College.
And now here's your host, Stephen Cutter.
Welcome to Coach Cut's Corner, where we raise the standard, pursue excellence, and share the stories of athletes and leaders who do things differently. Around here, discipline, belief, and preparation aren't just slogans. They're habits that shape success. Every episode gives you a look inside the mindset, the culture, and systems that drive uncommon results. Whether you're here to grow or just hear great stories from great people, you're in the right place. Let's lock in. Today's episode features an athlete whose journey defines perseverance and execution. She's from Tacoma, Washington. She's one of the only a few women playing college baseball in the United States. She was cut twice from her high school baseball team, yet instead of quitting, she trained for a few years at Driveline Baseball's academy team, earned her shot, and now competes at the University of Olivet. Her dream? To one day coach professional baseball. Savannah Turner joins me in the studio today, and I can't wait for you to hear her story. Savannah, welcome to the show. You're one of only a few women playing college baseball. Did a little bit of research, and from what I can recall, 2023, I believe there was around 8, and 2024, there was around, I believe, 9 in baseball. So I don't know what the numbers are going to be this year, but you're one of only a few. And that's really unique, just alone, just that piece of it. And then you've got the high school story that I kind of touched on just a little bit. And then you've also could have easily walked away from it all, but you didn't. And before we get into that whole journey, what were your early years growing up like in Tacoma? And what sports did you look for before baseball became that pathway or that dream?
Yeah, so I've always played competitive sports growing up. I started skating competitively from 7 to about 11.
What's competitive roller skating look like?
Well, my mom actually managed a roller rink when I was younger. Yeah, so I lived at this rink, and I went to nationals about 3 times. I was actually sponsored by a skate company when I was younger, so I was really into it. I like lived to skate, so I did that for about 5 years. And then one day, I just didn't like it anymore, and it was pretty devastating. But yeah, I lived to skate for like 5 years. I made a lot of my lifelong best friends, 4 girls who like I talked to regularly, and that's
from that experience.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Did you have food at the roller rink?
I mean, like skate food, like pizza, stuff like that, popcorn, pretzels. Yeah.
Was it pretty decent?
It was decent.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you were really into the skating piece of it.
Yeah.
Anything else that you dabbled in through the youth time?
Yeah, I played club volleyball for 2 years, and then COVID hit, and then I kind of stopped sports for a few years. I had some medical issues, so that kind of put a damper on just kind of sports activity as well. And then that's kind of when I started baseball my sophomore year.
Okay, so then at your sophomore year, you decide that you're going to play baseball. Mm-hmm. You hadn't played really any baseball. You'd played a little bit of softball, though, right, if I recall?
I played softball the year that I got cut from baseball.
Okay.
So
you try to go out for the baseball team.
Yes.
And you go to tryouts. Mm-hmm. What were tryouts like? Was there a lot of people there? Or?
Yeah, my high school was pretty good. I'll give them that. There's about 50 guys. We had a full JV, full varsity. I think about like 5 to 8 people got cut.
Okay. So this is your sophomore year.
Yeah.
Sophomore year. Did you feel like you had a chance to make the team, or were you really, you didn't know what you didn't know?
I had no idea what I was walking into. I'd been playing for like 2 months, mostly just practicing like with my dad. And I have a private coach named Matt who I continue to work with throughout leading up to college. I had no idea what I was walking into. I think I literally showed up with a glove and a bat and a helmet. And I was like, all right, I'm ready to go.
Well, in reality, that's all you actually need. Yeah. So you mentioned you've been practicing with your dad. Did he really have a large impact on the dreaming and the journey of baseball? Or was this something that he was a little bit surprised by as well when you said, hey, I'd like to try out for the baseball team?
I think everyone in my family was just like, what is she doing? Like this, it was a shock to everyone. I think my parents were just like, okay, yeah, sure, like, go for it. I don't think anyone thought that it would go this far at all. I mean, my dad just loves playing sports, and I think my dad is honestly such a big reason why I'm here. The amount of hours he put into throwing BP, playing catch, just everything is so big, and really was a lot of development in my swing just with the reps. But yeah, I don't think that he really like registered what was going on. He's just like, oh, okay, sure, I'll go play catch with you. Sure, I'll throw you front toss. No big deal.
So what happens next? You're at tryouts. Tryouts are over. And then what happened? What kind of coach had a conversation with you, or what was it like?
So we were all in like a big circle, and he just kind of called off our names and was like, all right, if I call out your name, you don't have a spot here.
So your name was called.
Yeah.
You're a sophomore in high school. Your name's called. Do you just walk off the field at that point?
Yeah.
That probably had to be pretty hard.
I mean, yeah, it was definitely like, oh, wow, this is definitely going to have an impact on my social life in high school. And it definitely did. I won't lie. Yeah, I just remember, I mean, I couldn't drive at that point. I didn't have my license. And so my mom picked me up. It's like, mom, this is not good looks for me. And she's like, it's okay. You'll get through it. I'm like, I'm not getting through this one. But yeah,
those are kind of the life lessons that they really suck at the time they're happening.
Yeah.
And then once you can kind of move past them a little bit, you look back on them and it wasn't the end of the world.
No.
It's one of these things that actually helps you become just a little bit stronger.
Yeah.
And it's not as big of a deal as it seems at the time. But that being said, a lot of times in your youth, when you do have rejection or failure, whatever you want to label it, a lot of times what happens is you just kind of want to quit. You want to get as far away from that as you possibly can. You don't want to be around that again. You kind of changed course a little bit, and not only did you start working a little bit harder, but you also went into your junior year and faced that again on your team. And so at that point, was that the time where you started working with Driveline Baseball?
Yeah, so I played club for Driveline starting my junior year and then senior year.
So were you still working with your dad after you'd gotten cut from your sophomore year, or did you take a break for a little bit?
No, I never did. I worked with Matt and my dad. I honestly think that getting cut really fueled me. I think that that was like a good like eye-opening experience of like, okay, this is going to be difficult, a lot more difficult than like I thought it was. I mean, at the time, like I definitely thought that I could have made JV, but it was like I got kind of like, okay, no, I actually can't go swing a bat and then walk out onto a field and get a spot somewhere. It was like, okay, I actually have to like figure out how to be a useful player on a team and how to actually be decent. And so looking back on it, I think that that rejection was like a really good experience. I think it's the first time I athletically had someone ever tell me no, that like, no, you actually aren't good enough to be here.
Yeah, it's powerful, very powerful stuff when it happens to you. So you keep training, you decide that you're going to try out for the team again as a junior.
I actually didn't retry out my junior year.
Okay.
I played varsity softball my junior year, but I was training at Driveline Baseball.
So what was the softball like as you're training so much for baseball?
Coaches honestly thought that it might help my swing to see a higher pitch because softball rise and then
it's just from a different angle.
Yep. I don't think that it really honestly had any effect to anything. It might have made my arm a little better because a heavier ball just throwing.
Okay. Did you like softball?
I did. I'm not going to lie. I'd rather be on a girl's team than a guy's team, but I just don't have the passion for it like I do with baseball. So it was never really worth it.
Where do you think that passion came from? Was that something that started just from the failure of it, or was it even more so prior to that?
I think that it just kind of started my sophomore year trial being like, okay, like this is something that I'm going to do. I'm going to figure it out. And then having someone be like, actually, no, you're not going to play here. And then be like, okay, well, no, actually, I am going to figure this out anyways. And so I think on top of that rejection, it just kind of kept fueling into more passion of, yeah, someone might tell me I'm not going to do this, but I actually am going to find a way to figure this out.
Let's talk about the Driveline Academy team.
Yeah.
you got exposed to at least a few things that you weren't commonplace, we'll say. You, mm-hmm. I'm sure you had to train up with a lot of machines and mm-hmm. heavy bats yeah. and all that stuff. So let's talk about that a little bit. What'd that look like?
Yeah, I think walking into Driveline, I mean, I was not immersed in baseball environment or the industry at all. So going into Driveline, I walked into the facility for the first time. I was like, wow, this is so nice. What is this?
And this is in Kent, right?
Yeah, this was in Kent. So the Kent facility is so big. It's, I think,
It didn't used to be, but yeah, it's grown a lot.
It's huge now. So I was like, wow, this is such a nice place. I get there and I remember my tryout, like it was all off like machines and just like stuff that I had never used. I just had no idea what I was doing, but they gave me an opportunity and that opportunity has taken me a lot of places.
Was it challenging mentally being there?
I think a little bit, but not in like a way of a Driveline issue, but I think Driveline's very data-based. So having numbers constantly, but having the numbers of men constantly being around is something that I really did have to adjust to, and definitely something that my coaches really had to work with me on, of being like, this is a you versus you. This isn't a you versus your teammates. Like,
yeah, run your own race kind of thing.
Like your teammate who's putting up 100-mile-an-hour exit velo, that's not you. And sorry, that's probably not ever going to be you. So let's not try to compete with that. Let's try to compete against yourself. And that was something that was definitely, I really had to take a step back my second year. I need to not just sit here and like stare at hit tracks and be like, wow, I suck. And that was something that was definitely challenging for me.
Yeah, that makes a ton of sense. And trying to just put myself in your shoes, and it's almost like you start to really get great at the failure piece of it.
Yeah.
And, you know, and that internal voice in your head is always so powerful too. And you talked about it a little bit, and I know Ryan's experienced it a ton too, where it's just like, you know, if you think you can do something, you give yourself a really great shot to do that something. That doesn't mean that it's going to be perfect. That doesn't mean that you're necessarily going to get to that realm that you want to get to. But if you think you can, you give yourself a great opportunity. And when you let that seed of doubt start really taking over your thought process, then that's usually where the law of attraction comes in, and you just start attracting the negativity. And man, when you're in a facility like Driveline, which is an incredible, like you said, an incredible facility, but you're also looking around at most of the athletes and they're being really, really solid athletes that have huge dreams too. It's not like they're just in there to be in there to hit for, you know, 20 minutes. They have dreams themselves. So you're kind of, comparison theory is running wild at those points. You trained in there for 2 seasons?
Yes.
Okay. Did you see growth in your numbers?
Yeah, I think especially on the lifting side, I was the strongest that I ever was when I was at Driveline. There's a lot of things that played a factor while coming to college and just a different environment, different food. I kind of had a knee injury over the summer, so I didn't lift a ton. But like my junior and senior year, like I could keep up with my teammates in the lifting. Like I definitely wasn't outlifting anyone, but I could keep up. Mm-hmm. And I think that was such a big adjustment also coming to college. And just being like, oh, wow, I am not outlifting anyone here. I am like scrapping by, like being with these 20-year-old men. Like, sure. But no, I think that Driveline, like high performance side and lifting side, that's something that I saw huge growth in. I put on like 20 pounds within my first year at Driveline. It was an insane jump from just everything.
That's pretty cool. We see about 16 to 18 pounds in our freshmen when they come in here of positive. We're not talking about the, you know, the bad freshman negativity weight. We're talking about 16 to 18 pounds of positive growth in our freshmen. And it's kind of the same theory. It's pretty intentional. It's a lot of education, a ton of education. A lot of that education isn't necessarily stuff that you didn't already know, but it's stuff that you start applying, and then you look back on it after you stack some bricks with it and you're like, holy smokes, like this actually works.
Yeah.
So let's fast forward a little bit. You're at Driveline in Washington for a couple seasons. You've been told that you're not enough to be able to play high school baseball. You start training, metrics start going up, confidence starts going up. It doesn't mean that all days were sunny in 75. It was just, you have this goal of to be able to play college baseball. Mm-hmm. And that goal is a pretty challenging goal. As I said earlier on in the show, 8 or 9 people typically in a season, women will play college baseball. So out of the thousands of college baseball players across the country at any level, it's a really small number.
Yeah.
You end up getting an opportunity at the University of Olivet.
Yeah.
you visit when our field was actually flooded. This is what was, yeah. This is a cool story. But so you stayed at a hotel, you're overlooking our field, mm-hmm. and it was actually flooded. And you were thinking like, I think you were telling me like, what the heck is going on here? But anyways, so you visit and you get an opportunity. Mm-hmm. What was that like?
Well, I think my process of reaching out to coaches was just so, so long. And it was like the most relieving feeling to even get a response back.
What do you mean long?
I started reaching out to coaches August of my senior year.
Okay.
So I heard back from Santi, who's my head coach, February. Mm-hmm. And so I had been reaching out, emailing, calling persistently just every day. And I was getting nothing. And so it got to a point where I was like, I found three D3 schools and I was like, I'm going to one of these schools. I don't care. Like I am calling, I'm emailing until they basically pick up the phone and say, you need to stop calling me. I don't want you. And so it was Olivet, some school in New York, and then one in like New Hampshire. Yeah. And so I sent an initial email, no response from any of them. And then I think I sent another one like a week later, no response. Then I called all the coaches, left a voicemail, no response. And I was like, all right. I'm like running out of time because my mom was also kind of in my ears like, hey, May 1st, you need to make a decision because I wasn't going to go to a small school and housing was due for where I was going to go if I didn't find a place to play. Yeah. So she was kind of like, hey, like May 1st, we got to figure this out. And so I was like, well, I don't know what to do because I can't get anyone to respond to me. So then I eventually picked up the phone and was just like, I'm going to just call all the athletic directors at the schools. So I did. I called every single one of the school's athletic directors, and that's when I started to get responses. I tell everyone this, if they can't get a response from a coach, call an athletic director because you will get a response. So that's what I did. I got a hold of all the athletic directors pretty immediately, and I got a call back from Santi within the week. I set up a Zoom call with him and my mom, set up like my visit for April, and that's just where I ended up going.
What's that journey been like? And when I say journey, talk about a journey from Washington to the middle of Michigan. I think you told me a story like your mom and you flew here and your dad drove your car.
Yeah.
What was it, like 3-4 days?
Yeah, it was like 3.5 days. Yeah.
Unbelievable.
Yeah.
Pretty incredible. So you're on campus, you're in your fall season at this point. Mm-hmm. So you've got to experience some fall scrimmages and inter squads and practices and you're so far away from home. Mm-hmm. And things are different. It's not driveline.
Yeah.
It's not home.
Yeah.
It's a college campus.
Yeah.
And you have a campus where people on weekends tend to go home, which isn't that uncommon across the country.
Yeah.
But for you, you can't necessarily go home. So has that been a little bit of a work in progress too?
Yeah, it's definitely a struggle because everyone's like, oh, I'm going home. I'm going to see my parents. I'm like, oh, good for you. Good for you. Which, I mean, it sucks, but I also knew that, like, for college, I was never going to stay in state. I knew that once college hit, I was going to leave regardless, just because I think that college is a great opportunity to leave home.
Expand. And,
yeah, I think that my opportunity wasn't going to be in Washington necessarily, and I didn't want to get to, like, 30 and realize that I never left. So I knew that at 18, I was going to leave. I miss my home. I miss my parents. I miss hills, mountains. But
we have hills in Michigan.
I have not seen an actual hill. This place is the most flat land I've ever seen.
That's just not true. That's not true. Hey, we don't get the rain that you all get. So
I don't know. I've seen some flash flooding. Well, I saw the field flooded. Yeah. I've never seen that in Washington.
Okay. Yeah. True statement. So we met because of your perseverance, I would say. You had reached out because you were needed to do a job shadow.
Yeah.
And we end up connecting through a lot of kind of wild ways of connecting. I actually got back to you from you leaving me a voicemail, which is extremely uncommon on my office phone. And I try to direct people to other areas if you want to get a response. So probably a month ago or so, you basically followed me for like a full day, went to practice, you know, we did all kinds of different things. You were in the office for a while. But when you reached out to me, you said you had this dream that you wanted to coach baseball at the professional level. And I was like, perfect. Follow along. Let's see where we can go with that. So you kind of said that was your dream. Do you want to talk about that a little bit?
Yeah. I don't know. I just think that I have so much love and passion for baseball. And I think that there's very few things in my life that I can get rejected over and over again, and I will still continue to fight for it. And I think that baseball is one of those things. And so I think that working in baseball would just be ideal for me. I also enjoy being in a gym in athletic development and player development. I think that I want to work in strength and conditioning specifically as of right now. And I think strength and conditioning, that side of baseball, has been so important for me being, I mean, a female one, and just my growth, just how it translates onto the field specifically. I just think that it's a really important part of the game. And I think that if it's not done correctly, it just really affects a player. And I think that I've seen how, when it's done correctly, how much it can translate onto the field.
Positive or negative, yeah. It's going to affect for sure. When you think about looking 5 years ahead, mm-hmm. 5 years from now, do you see yourself playing or coaching or both?
That's really interesting because everyone's messaging me about that, like, new women's pro. Have you seen that? Mm-hmm. I don't think I'd be playing, though. I'm not going to lie. I think probably coaching. I don't want to be in college for 5 years. That's way too much. I've done something wrong if I'm still in school in 5 years.
What impact do you hope to have for the other people that are listening to your story? Not only women in baseball, but there's a lot of people that tune into the show that are just trying to grow a little bit or hear interesting stories about other people that are maybe going through some stuff. Are you hoping to have an impact with just your journey at this point right now?
Yeah, I think that, like, when you hear a no, it's not a failure no, it's just a redirection no. And I've heard a lot of no's in this game. And looking at the place that I'm at now, I thank God every single day that I heard no's from those people. One, they've developed my character, or that I'm just so glad that I didn't end up where I thought I wanted to end up. There was multiple club teams that I thought that I really wanted to play for, and then I found Driveline, and I'm like, thank God I was at Driveline and not those other clubs. So even with coaches I reached out to, had a little bit of contact with, I was like, wow, like, I really hope this works out. And then things have happened at the school or with their programs. I'm like, wow, thank God I did not end up there. So it's like, everything does happen for a reason. Rejection is really just redirection, and God does have a plan. So I think always keep that in mind. Everything does really happen for a reason.
I think back to that day a little bit when we first got together, and I warned you a little bit. I was like, oh, it's going to be kind of a longer day. And you were game for it. You were excited.
Yeah.
And what were you thinking after you left? Because, man, we spent some time in the athletic department. We went to practice. Might have been a leadership day, too.
Yeah,
so it was a leadership day. So not a short day. Leadership council, you were in that as well. So, yeah, okay, it's coming back to me. So what were you thinking when you left? Like, because you got another baseball experience.
Yeah.
And as you've already spoken about, you can have positive baseball experiences, you can have negative baseball experiences, but it doesn't really matter if you quantify them. It just means you get something out of it, whether it's positive or negative. Did you have some thoughts running through your head as you got to see a large roster team and see everything that was going on here?
Yeah, I remember I called my dad and I told him about leadership council, and I thought that was the best thing I'd ever seen. I thought that was so smart. Yeah, I just remember I called my dad. I was like, yeah, this was a great day and a great experience. I really liked it here, personally. I can't imagine anyone wouldn't. I remember just really liking leadership council and thinking that that was a really good open conversation that I was a part of, and I was glad that I was in that room instead of having team captains. I really liked that.
That's cool. What is the one thing you're focused on improving this season?
I think just my overall knowledge of probably just the game. I think since I haven't been playing, I mean, this is going on my third year, I think just social awareness within the game, whether I'm playing or just watching, just social awareness of the game, even if I'm like in the dugout, trying to pick up on cues of like what is really going on the field and not necessarily what could be different, but watching. I don't know if that makes sense, but
it makes a lot of sense just because baseball in general is not really short games.
Yeah.
And so people tend to get lost in a lot of other distractions and conversations and stuff. And typically in the game of baseball, there is a lot going on, whether it's positive or negative. And there's body language and there's momentum and energy and frequencies and all kinds of things that are going on in the game. And the more you can be cognitively aware of what's happening in the game, the quicker you can start learning why things are going the way they are.
Yeah.
So, Savannah, anything else you want to share before we start wrapping?
I don't think so.
Okay. Well, I appreciate you coming into the studio today. Your journey is proof that setbacks aren't the end. As you said, they're simply feedback. You've shown what it looks like to respond instead of react, to train instead of complain. And a lot of people can learn lessons from that, and to believe in what others can't yet see, not only in you, but in other people. For everyone listening, if today's conversation hits you, remember this: your history does not define your future, your execution does. Whether you're cut, overlooked, or told no, your next chip is still in play, spend it wisely. Make winning in life your habit, not your goal. Excellence isn't an outcome, it's a daily standard. Until next time, keep stacking bricks and go Stars.
Coach Cut's Corner is recorded live in the WLNZ studios with Dalian Lowry providing engineering and production assistance. Thanks for listening. If you enjoyed today's podcast, please share it and follow us on all forms of social media. Our program has been built and maintained with the help of many great people. If you want to be part of our mission, you can donate using the link in the show notes below. You can learn more at CoachCutter.com and more about our team at LCCStars.com. See you next time.